I should preface first that I don't know it in depth.
Okay.
I've been studying it quite carefully for the last 2.5 odd years. And there are 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. In the last 2.5 years, I've only studied 6 chapters. You know, I would say, you know, be king in your market before you look outside. Yeah, so I think I'm very bullish on India and I'm very bullish on Indian creative talent. I will then therefore only put an expense when I'm really able to justify it. It's about kitna phailaoge aap. You know, matlab, jitna phaila sakte utna hi phailao na. So I'm a believer of that, ki jitna phaila sakte utna phailao. There are some entrepreneurs who can really, you know, take those risks and stretch themselves, and you know, they've really done phenomenally well to create distribution, to create brands.
Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jibraj, and today I have with me a very fascinating guest. Join me in welcoming Harshil Karia, who's the founder of Shubhang and the co-founder of Lever Supermind. Thank you so much, Harshil, for joining me. Very excited to be hosting you.
Thank you, Jibraj.
Awesome.
What a cool name.
Indian Silicon Valley. Yeah. What do you make out of it?
What I make out of it is a guy connecting the dots in putting together a very exciting country that is mushrooming into its next phase of growth. So,
I thought the name comes from the fact that I felt I was fascinating over Silicon Valley. And I was like, India mein itna kuch ho raha hai. The innovation, the next wave of Silicon Valley is here. And I just got lucky with the name. But the reason that I'm very excited to be hosting you, by the way, is that this is the start of a new format for me as well. I figured that for the longest time, I've hosted tech founders who've raised some amount of venture capital and have built product-first businesses. But there's also this rising, you know, in this current funding winter, bearish markets, focus around profitability, and people are interested to also know about businesses, which should not be the case, by the way. It shouldn't be seasonal. But I figured that if we had to really bring out business stories, profitability stories, we ought to talk to people like yourself who have built successful, you know, businesses with profits and have scaled it up year on year. You're also building this and championing this large cause of global, right, where you want to take creative talent from India to the world and from the world to India, which is something I really want to cover. But I think what might be a good place to start is you're a product founder and a business or an agency founder as well today.
Services, yeah. Product services, and services, yes. Yeah.
How do you, you know, weigh both those things in your mind? If you can just bring us with speed when it comes to context, to Level Supermind and Shubhang, what is your time split like? What is your mindset shift like? And how did this take shape? I think that'll be a good place to start and we can go deeper.
Yeah, it's a good point to ask this question because now it's like effectively, give or take 2 years actively in Level Supermind. Mm-hmm. You know, almost 2 years in February. Sure. So it's a good time to ask this question because now I've kind of tuned into both the roles. My time split is first caveat by saying that I work Monday to Saturday. Mm-hmm. So Saturday is working for Level Supermind. Monday is their Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I give the whole of Saturday to Level Supermind. And then Monday to Friday, you know, I usually split my time approximately 75-25, 75% to Shubhang at the moment and 25% to Level Supermind. So if I weigh it out on average, it's about 60-40 of my time spent. Mm-hmm. The two, you know, there's two very different approaches to running both the companies. Yeah. And they're also at two very different stages. So I would say that right now, a lot of my focus on Shubhang is really on, I think where we are right now is we are, I would say definitely the top independently owned creative and technology agency in the country. So there, the real focus is on how do we drive excellence beyond. And it's a team of about 1,200 people. So how do you manage governance in and upgrade the systems constantly to manage that governance to make sure that, you know, you don't have unnecessary expenditure, you don't have, you have resources working at their optimum capacity. I realize that some people will read it and say it's resources, but, you know, fundamentally that, you know, all the inputs that we give are working at their maximum capacity and being able to bring the fullest versions of themselves. That work is of the highest standard, that we now have a clear strategy for our international expansion. And let's not forget that India is the fastest growing market in the world. So how do we continue to serve the Indian market and remain on top? And even while we may say, you know, while we may say that we are the largest, there is so much headroom for growth that actually with the largest, we are actually very small.
Correct.
So it's not really, I don't say it with, it's a factual statement, but if you look at it in the overall scheme of things,
there's a long way to go.
Yeah, largest is too small.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's an opportunity. And then with Level Supermind, it's, I'm learning so much about building products.
Hmm.
You know, how to be, actually what is teaching me most is to be consumer centric. Because a lot of our product development journey is built on the back of what we listen to consumers.
Mm.
We have a rule in the company that every member of the team has to speak to 5 consumers every week, come what may. So a lot of that really gives, and then there's a separate team which anyway speaks to consumers. A lot of that gives signals in terms of where to shape the product.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, you go through the product market fit exercise, you constantly map your NPS.
Yeah.
You know, you are we've got the AAA RRR report that we look at, you know, so there is a different way to manage a product because a product management is around, you know, how good is your acquisition, how good is your referral, how good is your revenue, how good is your retention. And those are the health metrics.
Mm-hmm.
In services, the health metric is more around, I would say, the quality of your work and the, you know, the client satisfaction scores
mm-hmm.
that you have. So there is an instituted CSAT.
Right.
And the second thing you want is optimum efficiency of management of resources. So there it's like about profitability management.
Yeah.
And then how well you are visible, spoken about, you know, what's your share of voice
mm-hmm.
on the work that you do. So it's two very interesting hats, and it's a privilege to be able to wear it. And I think I could thank my stars and, you know, all the effort that I get the opportunity to do this. I think that's, I'm very grateful for it.
No, that's lovely to hear, because from the outside, it looks like a steep challenge considering that, you know, Shebang is a B2B business. This is a consumer first business. B2C products in something that you're building with Level Supermind need to have virality, need to have a certain scope of, you know, just inherent product building that may not be the case with Shebang in a services business where the people or the delivery of service is the bottleneck.
Yeah.
So I think looks very interesting. The commonality though, and I was very fascinated when I came across this, was both problems that you're solving for on Shebang and Level seem like something that you came across firsthand, right?
Yeah.
Meditation is something that you are personally fascinated by, you want to solve for. And that's how Level Supermind came to being.
Yeah.
And with your experience of your previous agency, you had a different vision in mind, which is where Shebang came into being.
Yeah.
Do you think fundamentally as founders, it's important to strongly relate to the problem and only then solve for it? Or do you think it's an acquired skill where you can acquire the problem, develop empathy and then solve for it?
I think most founders can acquire, you know, and develop empathy fast. And that's what makes a founder a founder. In my case, it so happens to be that I've encountered the problems and decided to work on those problems. There is a sense of emotional charge at the early stage, particularly, which fuels you when you have a linked purpose. I think if we just really, you know, I mean, most founders who listen to your podcast would be fairly, you know, above average intelligence and would be able to solve most of the problems that exist. I think when you are deeply embedded with a sense of purpose, it gives you that little extra fuel that you need to go that extra mile to be able to solve. And purpose often gives you the ability to think longer. Purpose often gives you the ability to, because you're able to think longer, take the longer risk. So I think to each his own, but you know, in my case, I've chosen to anchor myself to build the life that I find worth living.
Sure.
And therefore to build the kind of companies that are enjoyable to build. I'm not sure if it'll stay like that forever, but you know, I'm consciously making choices like that.
Got it. But yeah, I think you've spoken about purpose a bunch of times before as well, and that shows in the work that you do, because then you're able to take a really long-term view of what you want to achieve. And that shows, I think, when you're personally related to a problem, it reflects in the work you do. Taking a step back, Harshil, I'd love to know from a creative and India lens, what you think about, you know, how we've done as a country, right? Because you've spoken about this. If you look at, you know, the BPOs and the services businesses of the country, if you take the top five Indian businesses, right, like the TCS and other companies in the country, they're all like services companies, Infosys, TCS, who've done great in the world, right? Then we are now seeing this product wave as well. We're seeing Freshworks, Zoho, all of these companies do really well across the globe. When it comes to the creative agency business, right, or the creative business in general, where do you think India is? Where do you think Shebang is in that scope of things? And how far are you in solving for it? Because I know you feel passionately about this. Yeah. So I'd love a breakdown of A, on a macro level, how do you see this happen? And B, on a micro level, how Shebang is solving for it?
Yeah, so I think I'm very bullish on India and I'm very bullish on Indian creative talent. Where is India on the larger scale of global creative services? Nowhere. You have WPP, which is British origin. You have Omnicom, which is American. You have Havas, which is French. You have Publicis, which is French. You have Dentsu, which is Japanese. You have Hakuhodo, which is Japanese. Where is the Indian entity? There is no Indian entity. And when we look at it from that standpoint, that is how big the opportunity is with the largest creative workforce in the world. So we have effectively sold ourselves to global talent. And, you know, I mean, no issues with that. If you see historically this industry, what has happened is that, I mean, then there have been a few. So if you look at, you know, RK Swami BBDO, which is one of the, you know, they've just gone in for a rights issue on the stock market. Or you look at Rediffusion, which was run, you know, they capped themselves out a bit. So they never went beyond a certain size. I think where Shebang is positioned uniquely is the, you know, we run in a very entrepreneurial fashion. We've got a decent start with a strong base of 1200 to be able to now go to the next leap of 10,000 and then the next leap of 100,000. We are trying to build ourselves as a fundamentally a services company for the new world. And we think that that opportunity exists everywhere across the world. Why do I think that that opportunity exists everywhere? It's because if you look at the global marketing landscape, there's a lot of Indians in high position who run marketing dollars for the large companies in the world. And I'm not saying an Indian should work with an Indian just for the sake of it, but there are certain Indian values of, you know, not to say die, you know, this entrepreneurial nature, finding an answer at all costs, the curiosity, which, you know, which you come on board with, you know, the ability to really focus on craft, you know. So I think it is now the next at least 40, 50 years is the time for India to really shine on the global stage. So if we can be the platform that allows people to do that, then that will be an interesting journey to undertake. So that is where we are on the journey. We've set up a base in the UK. We've set up a base in the Netherlands. And we will soon go to the Middle East. And then obviously, I think in the next 15 to 20 years, what will happen is that another supply market for us in terms of talent will become Africa. So how do we train our people in the next 10 years to really hone talent and then open up centers there? It's going to be an interesting journey. Where are we right now? If you see, if I had to really compare ourselves, WPP, the number one employer in our space, is over 300,000 people. So with 1,200 people, we are a speck. So we are not very forward on that journey, but we are determined and it will take us 15 years and we'll get there.
Absolutely. I love that. I think the clear understanding, vision, long-term outlook is very commendable and looks like the trajectory is very interesting. The other fascinating part which can become a bottleneck, Harshil, in services business, and this is from, you know, an outside-in look. I know very little about the industry in and of itself, but it looks like a lot of agency owners have this human problem, right? Which is to say that fundamentally in a services business, people are the bottleneck. So high amounts of training, strong, less attrition, All of these are problems to tackle and ensure you can keep in the business. You've been very vocal about the culture that Shebang builds. You've been very vocal about growing sustainably and being, you know, very client first. Talk to us about this talent dichotomy, right? Like, how do you retain great talent? How do you make them owners in a services-led business? How do you control training? All of these bits which can possibly become a bottleneck for scaling a services business.
Yeah.
I'd love to know your thoughts.
Okay, so let's answer this question from the point of view of purpose. Again, you know, by default, if you are a large employer, by default, you will have lots of people who will look at you as a transitionary workplace.
Right.
So let's be open and cognizant to that. Because lots of people will come into your workplace. Some people will say, hey, this is the place for me. And some people will say, hey, I'm going to give my best for the next 2 years and I'm going to be out.
Correct.
And I will move on to my next challenge till I find what is the fit for me. I think often people leave companies because that company is not their home for the long run.
Right.
I think as services company, what we try to ensure, and you know, attrition numbers are open. It's not like we are some Shivaji over everybody else. You know, we have comparable issues on attrition. By and large, services sees 20% attrition. We would be around that range. So what we have to ensure to do is that for the 2 years when somebody is looking at you as a transitionary workplace, that they give the absolute best. So what can you do within your four walls and the everything else that is there, that people give their absolute best? And that is the element of culture. And then from that, there will be a subsection of people who will want to define their career through the vehicle that you are building, because they find a shared sense of purpose. And they find that, you know, this, in my case, a lot of our senior talent finds the vision of this India to the world and the best of the world to India, a shared purpose. So then you have to, for those guys, you need to be able to give them enough consistent growth opportunities, upskilling opportunities, challenges. You need to pay them really well. You know, so those are standard metrics of making sure that, the, you know, they have enough fuel to consider this as a shared purpose and really own that shared purpose. And then for the ones who are coming and going, I always say to them, you know, you come, please, if you're going to go in 2 years, you're going to go. I always say to people who join our company, saying that if you want to go to another university, if your chances are, if you leave this workplace with a great portfolio, that you will get into the university of your choice. If you want to go to another agency, you're making a mistake. If you want to go to another brand, and you want to be on the brand side,
this is the best place to
hone your skill. And chances are that your package is going to be defined by the quality of the work you do here. So these are the three or four reasons people leave. The other being that people leave because of bad managers. That's in my control. These other three are not in my control. You know, and that's what we define. And so I say that, you know, therefore in the 2 years that you're here, please give your absolute best, because it's for your benefit. And you look at this as a transitionary workplace, I have no problem. But give your best when you're here. If you're not giving your best, you're out.
Right. Wow, that's very clear. And I think you've thought this through very deeply. The double-clicking aspect there, Harshal, would be how much of this talent eventually, you know, is beyond the control part of it. How much do you spend time in training versus where your mind share should be? Because I've heard from a lot of people that, you know, especially with agency founders, there's a lot in your control, which is to say that context, vision, selling, culture, hiring, all of this, right? And there will be times where you will be inclined to do things that you have to for the business, right? So how do you manage this sort of spectrum of what you have to do, which is necessary for the business in terms of numbers, in terms of growth, in terms of profitability, vis-a-vis the people side of things, right?
Yeah.
Which is culture, ensuring delivery, ensuring high NPS, all of that.
Okay, so let me answer this with first telling you a little bit about our structure.
Sure.
You know, maybe it gives you an insight into how things are then managed. Recruitment is run by our head of human resources, Mini Nair. She's close to 50 years old. She was the first hire that I made in this company. I deliberately chose to hire her because before this, she had run a network of 13 schools. So anybody who's able to hire teachers, anybody who's able to hear the issues of parents, manage all of that, is able to manage a very strong workforce. So I would say a lot of our workforce management is to do with the way the human resource is structured through Mini and her team, Shweta and, you know, the Amit Japneen, who we have in Delhi, and Gauri, who we have in Bangalore. You know, these are strong pillars that run the human resources. So you write right from recruitment to payroll to compliances to, you know, what have you. I mean, they run it well. Culture is managed by a guy called Anshul Sharma. So he looks after culture and internal communications, and that's really his role, to enrich the culture. You know, some examples of what he's done to enrich the culture. He works very closely with me on, we do two kinds of all hands meetings. One is, we do an, you know, every 60 days we do a town hall, and we also do a catch up with senior managers. So he runs both those programs with me. So everything from what goes into that presentation, recommendations on what messages need to be put in, is run by him. He's also running our academy. So the Shebang Academy, which is built on Zoho Spotlight, is run by him. So we've got a lot of recorded trainings. We pay our people to create trainings, and then we further pay them to deliver the trainings. So then it's not an individual responsibility. It's experts training experts. You know, no matter how much I say, I do not have the same expertise as each of my people in their separate domains. That's why they do what they do, I do what I do.
Right.
So he runs the Shebang Academy, along with Radhika Raheja, who's the lead, you know, the gray matter behind Shebang Academy. And Radhika has been with us for almost 7 years now. So she really understands what it takes to deliver a great service. And then what another program that Anshul is working on is our rewards and recognition program for the junior talent, where we have, you know, like, we have this fantastic system where a manager is awarded points. Each manager is awarded, let's say, for sake of an example, 20,000 points, and 20,000 points equal to 20,000 rupees per month. Right. So the manager has the ability, if you've done a good job today, send you 50 points, or like 50 is too less, but like, you know, 2,000 points. So each person on the rewards and recognition program at the junior level, the ones who exceptionally perform, get points. We have a company-wide leaderboard for the points. And then that allows you to identify the ones from the junior crop who are
really stars.
The ones who are the stars. Yeah. That defines a lot of, you know, what happens in your appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
Anshul also governs, you know, what we call the impact statement, which is on the basis of which your annual increment is defined. Mm-hmm. So the definition of the impact statement, he runs through his team with Manik Rege, runs the customer satisfaction program, CSAT program. So Mini is a strong player. Anshul is a strong player. I've got in my core team Indraneel Gowde, who's our head of new business. He's a shark. If you speak to non-founders, he's one guy you've really got to speak to. He runs our new business team across all cities that we work in. And I often don't need to go pitch to new business because he's there, because he's got my back. And then I've got managing finance and operations. I've got Dhwani Jagasia, and in her team, Devanshi Zaveri, who really look at governed P&Ls and annual business plans for each of the business units in the company. And then, so then we do a quarter by quarter business catch up to make sure that, hey, you've been given a business plan at the start of the year, which is kind of co-created with you, but also centrally run. And now, how well are you doing? What's your report card like?
Yeah.
So they kind of run that program. Of course, I'm involved in all of these programs, but they run the programs. And then there's the business heads in each of the cities. There's the creative product, which is run by Reoman Patel, our chief creative officer, who's got ECDs in Delhi, Manish Kingar, who's a very good guy. And then there's a ACD in Bangalore, Joshua. And then there's a ECD in Bombay. There's our NCD, National Creative Director, Aditya Mehendale. So it's a lot of thorough professionals who are doing different parts of the job. Our film business, production business, is run by Rachaita Vyas, who runs Shebang Motion Pictures. On the creative side, we had one of our ex-Shebang Motion Pictures, Abhimanyu Balasubramaniam, who's now moved on as a creative director in the same system. Mm-hmm. Our tech is run by my co-founder, Sohil. So he's really looking after the entire tech business, and we've got on the service side. I mean, I could go on with the names, but you know, you get the drift that, you know, on the tech side, then there are further segregations. You know, you've got a leader of excellence, who runs each of these domains, and then tying it together is what I know how to do well. So, and you know, that's how things are run.
I'm curious to understand, how intentional were you forward looking about like 5-7 years back to make this happen, vis-a-vis, was it driven by like, you have to do this? Like, was it a port of call to, okay, if I don't do this, we're not going anywhere because I'll become the bottleneck? Or was it as thought through as you've been able to explain it?
Right no, now? I think you arrive at things as you arrive at things. I mean, sometimes you can, I think when you, at least that was my limitation then, or even today is my limitation. I don't know what the system is going to be like at 10,000 people.
Right.
I don't know yet. And often, as you, you know, as the great Rumi says, as you walk on the way appears. So you walk the path, and you walk it with diligence and sincerity and hard work, and, you know, with absolute intention to serve, and you will move that forward.
Yeah. And across all of these folks, is there any one or two distinct features that, you know, you could probably highlight to understand how to hire leaders, right? Especially for such businesses, they could have been with you for a long time, but what was the really standout feature that made you give them the responsibility that they have today?
I mean, I can look at, I don't know the answer to this very honestly. There's a lot of material out there which people can refer to, which is better than what I would tell them right now. In my experience, growing and grooming teams in the long run is much better
than hiring for
Time. And of course, there will be times when your company will grow that you will need to hire for external talent. So let me take examples of two people. You know, I'll take the example of Sushant Vitthaldas, who's our head of business in Bangalore, and Manish Kingar, who's our ECD in Delhi. You know, Sushant comes with an experience where he started his career in an advertising agency, was looking after retail for Apple, and then was in Dubai for Landmark Group looking after retail operations and marketing operations there. So, diversity of experience, exposure to see how businesses function, you know, a sense of adherence to systems, and a clear kind of hand on managing people, you know, and then there's obviously, you'll see the proven track record. Mostly for a senior talent, I like to see their past work more than anything else.
Got it.
You know, not key, what do you want to do in the future? What have you done in the past? Because your future is often defined by how you behaved in the past. So that is, you know, from Sushant's case, was a very strong addition to our team about 5 years back. And then therefore looking after the Bangalore business and looking after that business in a very structured way.
Right.
In Manish's case, you know, very strong creative talent with a desire to win at the global stage, burning with ideas, already came in day one with saying, I want to do these kind of ideas, has the track record to back it. Again, the past work. So I think I would put a lot of emphasis on the past work. Most founders and most people in hiring positions, I used to first ask, you know, have very long first interviews. Now I'll be like, just to, because you gauge vibe very quickly. Vibe theek hai, toh then you don't, that's your just first to let the person into the door. Then the emphasis is a lot on the, show me exactly how you did the past work. Talk me through how you did the past work and show me, give me all your viewpoints, especially with respect to how you did your past work.
Contextually explain.
And then there would be a thorough assignment, and then the stage after that.
Fair. But I get the premise. I mean, I was just trying to gauge, you know, how much of this can you really perceive or like forward plan versus how much of this do you have to react and then urgently hire, because that, I'm guessing, is not the most proactive way of doing this anyway. So that was the premise. But no, very, very helpful. And I especially love how you've been able to reference individuals with name and point out their contributions. I don't think I've heard many, you know, founders do that because of a paucity of time sometimes. But I think that's really commendable and goes to show the kind of leader you are.
Thank you.
One thing that I really want to understand is, and I'm guessing you are, you know, familiar with news, tech news, venture news, and I'm sure you read these things, right? You know, EBITDA negative, right? Flipkart is still EBITDA negative as a company. Other tech companies are as well. For somebody who runs a business with, you know, 3-digit crores in profit, 200+ crores in revenue, and then, you know, some 20% plus in EBITDA, How do you weigh what the tech world does when it comes to business and cash flows versus what you do? Do you ever think of it as a trade-off of not having enough growth capital because you are a services business, or does that never cross your mind? That's one on a micro level. Vis-a-vis, what do you think about the general tech world, which does employ a strategy of burning immediate, like short-term capital for long-term growth and profitability? What are your thoughts?
I think for the services business, we have to run the way we run. There is no other way. We can't, because services fundamentally is about more contracts, more people. You can increase the efficiency of those people, but effectively the way negotiation works, and the capital is often not the bottleneck. Raising money to scale a services business is when you've really been able to really stretch out the ability to run on your own. And then often, you know, I mean, you raise capital either to crunch time or, you know, you just, I mean, effectively to crunch time is the only only reason you'll raise capital in the services business. So, because I know ki time bahut hai, chalega. And we are growing 45 to 50% year on year. Usse zyada aapko kya chahiye? You know, so yes, maybe at some point in time, and that I am right now working on capital planning for the future, whether that's 5 years, 7 years from now, in terms of when that capital is raised, we will see. Right now is my learning period on that. So I don't know enough to comment. What I will say is that I bring the same philosophy into my product business. So I run my product business that we have to break even every month. Yes, to build the product, there was a need for an initial investment. To build the product, you know, you need to kind of set the ground rails, and you need to make sure the product is worthwhile bringing into the market. But once it's in the market, you sell on day one as if it's any other day. So that brings a high emphasis on sales and distribution, and that also helps balance out your you know, judicious nature on cost. So I will then therefore only put an expense when I'm really able to justify it. It's about kitna phailaoge aap, you know, matlab jitna phaila sakte utna hi phailao na. So I'm a believer of that, ki jitna phaila sakte utna phailao. There are some entrepreneurs who can really, you know, take those risks and stretch themselves, and you know, they've really done phenomenally well to create distribution, to create brands, sometimes create personal brands. So people have done that. My philosophy is spread how much you can spread, and over time, once you spread how much you can spread and you start getting good at that. So, you know, in Level Supermind also, we have this focus that we need to be at break-even every month. And we are at break-even now since January till September. So, you know, we launched in September last year, and it took us 3 months to reach operational break-even. So, you know, that was a mindset with which we operated, and we reached the break-even, and then we're continuing to invest further and therefore continuing to remain break-even, and the product gets stronger and stronger, company gets stronger and stronger. So it is, I guess, that balancing act is the balancing act of any business. Now I have, that is how I like to run my business. Do I have a viewpoint on how the others operate? I don't know if I'm qualified enough to have a viewpoint on that. I know what I know, and that's what I operate on.
Fair. Makes sense. I think I have one final thread to understand the scaling up journey of, you know, Shivang, because I think that's the pressing thing. A lot of people are able to start, not a lot, like a reasonably amount of people have started agencies successfully, but to grow one to the scale that you have is a decently tall ask. I want to understand this international piece, right? Where in the journey did you realize that it's time for us to go international? And what was it regarding, you know, selling services globally that you have learned distinctly that can help future agency founders? That'll be super helpful, Harshal.
Maybe you can ask me the selling skills distinctly internationally. Maybe if we meet, have the opportunity to meet 1.5-2 years later, I'll be able to add a lot more depth to it.
Okay.
Again, right now it's I'm at a nascent stage. I don't know if I can answer with authority very clear, tangible things. I'm in the journey. I am selling.
Makes sense.
And I don't want to attempt to sound pompous on things I don't really fully have not really creamed.
Okay.
To answer the first part of when did you see the fact that the opportunity exists, I, you know, 2-3 signs I looked at. I looked at a lot of my clients. They were getting transferred internationally because either they wanted the CEO role and they weren't getting the CEO role, so they went to head a region marketing.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, I have a relationship here,
right,
but I don't have a presence there. That's one. Second is that a lot of the multinationals work in a very aligned, integrated way. So if you do work well in one market, chances are that you'll get good word of mouth in another market.
Right.
But if you don't have the ability to serve in that other market, you're not going to get it. So these were the two main reasons. The third, but probably the most important reason being that, and I had this discussion with Sir Martin Sorrell. I had a good chat with him about 2 times, long chat. And when I saw his view, he looked at South America and India as really supply centers. You know, South America for the flair on design talent and India for the quality of service and the tech talent. And when you have somebody that, you know, somebody with that much clarity looking at it from a parallance that way, I'm saying I'm sitting in that supply talent.
Yeah.
So I'm actually best poised to make the most of it. So the fact that we have this large, you know, 1.4 billion workforce, which we can really leverage, that is the opportunity. How much I'm able to leverage, what size it turns into, that much I don't know, but I have to give myself that shot.
Got it. No, that's fair. More strategically, is there a point in revenue or number of years or, you know, client satisfaction that you reach and then start thinking about geographical expansion, or do you think there's enough depth? Do you have any thoughts there?
I would say to look at geographical expansion, you need a strong home base. So going by current market standards, 1,000 is a strong home base.
Got it.
1,000 people serving diversity of clients is a strong home base. And then, like I said, India is the fastest growing market in the world. So I don't want it to come across at all that India is not a priority for us. India is our number one priority. Internationalization will add to that number one priority, and over time it will tune. But, you know, I would say, you know, be king in your market before you look outside.
Got it. Fair. I think that brings the entire circle of, you know, scaling agencies, going global and taking this entire vision of Shebang going global and taking creative talent from India for the world. The other aspect of what I really want to discuss through this discussion is going to be your personal sort of traits and characteristics that I found very helpful in the larger scheme of things, because to manage a product company, service company, and have these fundamentals is a rare combination. I want to double click on that. One of the things is your learnings from Bhagavad Gita. In all of the interviews that I was checking out before, you know, through my research leading up to this conversation, I figured you reference the Gita a lot because you've deeply read about it, and at least from the external facing surface, it looks like you know it in depth. If I had to ask you the role of the Bhagavad Gita in your life and your top learnings, what would they be?
So I should preface first that I don't know it in depth.
Okay.
I've been studying it quite carefully for the last 2.5 odd years.
Okay.
And there are 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. In the last 2.5 years, I've only studied 6 chapters. So I'm 1/3 through the Bhagavad Gita, and I've consciously decided to take 2.5 years to study it. What I mean by consciously decided to take it slow to study, you know, over 2.5 years, 6 chapters, is that I have a study group who I study with, the study group is a very, you know, strong group of a combination of scholars and seekers. So we have, 2 people who lead the group in terms of, you know, they have a very good scholastic wisdom of Vedic philosophy. And then there are different seekers all at different stages in their lives, and we all contribute and resonate together on the learnings. So typically the framework is you will read 1 or 2, or in most, on average, 2 to 3 verses every week. You will read them in depth. You will read the background behind each verse in depth. And then you will study, you will discuss, make the notes, and then make the notes post that. So that's the process. I think the two or three things that I would have taken out from the Bhagavad Gita is very early on in chapter 2, there is the concept introduced of Swadharma. So Swadharma is basically my dharma and therefore my service to the world. So what is the unique role that I can make in larger service to the world? And each one of us, if we deliver to our maximum Swadharma, the world will reach higher, because we are all contributing the best of what we can do. Like, you are here contributing the best of what you can do, which is, at this point in time, you feel there was a calling inside you saying that I want to be able to connect the dots on this Indian Silicon Valley. So each one of us playing our role at the maximum capacity with the maximum input is our responsibility. The second is the concept of detached, dutiful work. So work with maximum duty, with detachment to outcome. So yes, and that doesn't mean you don't chase a growth, that doesn't mean you don't benchmark, that doesn't mean you don't measure, that doesn't mean banjare raho. But it means, even despite that, if the outcome doesn't come your way, you continue dutifully towards your outcome. Not towards an outcome, you continue dutifully action. Towards the cause.
Yeah.
So that's the second thing that, you know, I would have learned. The third is the interconnectedness. There is a very beautiful passage in the third chapter where there is an example of how the interconnectedness of the world works. You know, the rain comes at the right time, the plants flower at the right time, giving fruits to us at the right time, and then, you know, the circular nature of the world. So how each one of us is really connected to each other, interconnected, and therefore what can we do in service of each other with every action. And that takes us, therefore, to perform from a mind space which is of the highest level. Mm-hmm. So there is, you know, that would be the third. I'm thinking also about the aspect, I think the other thing that, you know, if I had to put relevance to this particular conversation, you take the context of the senses and how the, you know, the five senses that we have, really the context of being able to not fall prey to the senses, but use the senses as instruments for us to be able to achieve our maximum. I don't know, this is a little too fuzzy and broad, but you know, there's a reason on the main picture you have the five horses by the charioteer, Shri Krishna, who's holding the five horses. And to really move forth towards your purpose or towards your Swadharma, you rein the horses to really move forward in that direction. So I often see it as like, if you can turn yourself into that way, you use your senses for where you want to take the world through your work and your contribution. That is the best way to manage oneself. There's a lot of other sub, you know, I could keep going on with this, because there are a lot of other sub things about, you know, the three things that you need to surround yourself with, Shastra, Sangha, and Sadhu, and fourth being Swadhyaya. So Shastra means you read, you study the right things in the world. And that may be the scriptures, or that may be things which actually you read and take you to a higher place. It could be like, I'm reading Hit Refresh right now, Satya Nadella's biography, or like pre-biography. Yeah. And then the Sangha, the people you surround yourself with. Yeah. So how do you, you know, who are the people who are your core circle? Yeah. Sadhu, or, you know, like, so Shastra, Sangha, Swadhyaya, and Sadhu. So Swadhyaya is also your, you know, your own meditation practice and your own practice of stilling yourself, stilling your mind. Mm. How do you use that? And then how do you, you know, learn from those who are more qualified than you? Mm-hmm. And then constantly, therefore, raise your standards. These are, I mean, every week there's some new interesting nugget that comes out.
Yeah.
But this is what it is.
This is very, very insightful. I think I don't think I've heard in this concise of a form the impact of what Geeta can do. I have a quick follow-up on that, right? Was there any prompt for you to start reading the Geeta in depth? And B, how much of this comes to contextual use and actual sort of practical application, right? What is the effort that goes beyond understanding and learning about what the Geeta teaches? How much of this is like putting it into application? Because very often, like, especially in this world, there is an information overload. It's very easy to do something, learn about something, very difficult, reasonably difficult to actually practice it in life. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to practice it on a day-to-day basis in terms of what I'm imbibing. Okay. So, you know, right from being clear about what is my purpose to being clear about that even despite this, I don't matter at all. So with that humility to function within that paradigm, to be able to create a framework for maximum service to all with a detachment to outcome. There are times, you know, like right now it's I can say all the good things, but there are so many outcomes which don't go your way. And then to continue to serve towards those outcomes, to collectively raise the standard of the people I am surrounding myself with. Also, if I talk about the sadhu in terms of the mentors, surround yourself with the mentors. The Shastra many way inculcating in my everyday, and then you seek more. And Shastra, even within the subject matter, you have Shastra. So you could, you know, Bhagavad Gita is not the only Shastra. Then within search or within media or within technology, I'll have my Shastra or I'll have my sadhu. And then therefore the Sangha and the Swadhyaya in terms of like the purpose or the practice of everyday life. You know, the seeing the interconnectedness between, often you're orchestrating things. So seeing the interconnectedness between things. I mean, I don't know if it's able to answer like in a very...
I meant to further just double click on what is the conscious effort that goes into the application vis-a-vis the studying, right? That was my...
I think it becomes a way. Once you study, anything that you study, and if you truly study it with your heart...
Then you ought to practice it.
Yeah.
Get better at it. Fair. That's super interesting. The second dimension, and now you have a company on top of it, is meditation. And that plays a crucial role in your life. You've again spoken about this in the past at public forums as well. But I want to just understand there also, right? The role of meditation, like what prompted you to start meditating, the impact it has made on you. And also and this could be a myopic viewpoint, but I don't think too many of us have the ability to practice it. Or have started already practicing. Of course, you're solving for the very same problem via the product level, but on a more fundamental basis, what does the science of meditation mean? And then how does it translate to people? And why do not enough people practice it? I would love a deconstruct of this entire bit from your end.
Superb. So we are now moving level to a mind performance app,
okay,
not purely a meditation app.
Got it.
So if I just take a step back, what we've got on level is we've got a wide variety of meditation practices. I would argue that probably the widest variety of meditation practices in the world.
Okay.
We've got specific workouts designed for mind-muscle connection.
Okay.
We've got a product for good sleep, where we've looked at sleep and we look at yog nidra techniques for midday rest. We've got a journaling product which prompts you to be more aware about your everyday. We've got an affirmation product within the cell which allows you to say stuff out or record yourself saying stuff out and awards you for saying it correctly. So all of that is bundled through a layer of gamification. So that's what we've got fundamentally in the product, and that's why we are looking at a mind performance product,
not a meditation product.
It's a subset of mind performance.
Okay.
And we've got also now coming very soon, we've got mind performance games coming in.
Okay.
So you got a whole category of mind performance that we want to be able to create. And the now what you'll see now on the product, if you have the Android version and soon the iOS version in a couple of days, is we've also got an AI side-by-side assistant walking you through your journey. So if you meditated on one thing or you did with one particular workout, it'll prompt you saying, hey, by the way, I want you to think a bit about this. So that's a little bit about how we are building the product. This is mind performance. Now, when I come to meditation, meditation is a very big part of mind performance because it is scientifically the best way to increase the capacity of your mind performance. Now, you can take my word for it, or if you're interested in this topic, there is a fantastic book called The Science of Meditation, written by Richard Davidson and Daniel Goleman, where they've studied papers on meditation from the 1950s up until today to really put together the impact of meditation on the mind. Now, what one often starts seeing is that once somebody is in 2 weeks of a regular meditation practice, one starts seeing reduced signs of stress. Why? Because there's an area of our brain called the hippocampus where the stress signals originate from. And you, with regular meditation practice and stilling your mind, you're actually creating cushion around the hippocampus. Then you see increased signs of focus in about 2 months of a regular practice. 2 weeks, you'll definitely see reduced signs of stress on everyday basis if you do 2 weeks. 2 months, every day, you will see certainly increased signs of focus. Now, why does that increased sign of focus happen? Because what you're doing in a meditation practice is you're effectively teaching your mind to focus on only one thing at a time. So you are either watching your breath, or you're watching a visualization, or you're listening to a mantra. So you're training your mind only focus on this one thing. So therefore, in 2 months, your mind certainly learns that this is how I can do focus. So then, if you're the type who, you know, grabs for your phone once in a while or is in a meeting but thinking about something else, zoning out, meditation actually training your mind to do that. What you see is in 2 years of a regular practice, you see different parts of the brain really start, you're almost sending breaths of fresh air. With stillness, you're sending breaths of fresh air to your brain. You see enhanced memory. And then beyond that, for long-term periods, 5 to 7 years of a regular practice, you see enhanced ability of cognition load through aspects of neuroplasticity. Now, why does that happen? You know, let's break this down. We had a couple of days back on, we run the LSM podcast, Level Supermind podcast. We had Dr. Sid Warrior on the LSM podcast. He's a neuroscientist and he had a fascinating discussion about, actually there's two parts of our brains, you know. There is the limbic brain, which is more this side. There is the prefrontal cortex, or the frontal brain, which is more this side. And all of it through the spinal cord, you are connected to your actions of the body. You know, the central lobe of the brain connected through the spinal cord is therefore your actions. Now, look at the analogies here. You know, when you are going through a spiritual process, you are going higher. Higher means you're going to the higher parts of the brain, because the prefrontal cortex is actually the seat of your character. It is what makes Jivraj Jivraj. It's what makes Harshal Harshal. So it is the place where our traits, our character, our personality, over time, our accumulated experience which drives intuition is all built into the prefrontal cortex. It is, we as human beings have much larger prefrontal cortexes than most mammals. You know, our limbic size of the brain in proportion to our body is often similar to the others. The limbic is where your flight, fight, your instinct, wit, your reactive nature is which sits in the limbic. And the, you know, most people, what you call are integrated people, are the people whose thoughts is equal to their actions. Effectively, you have to break it down. An integrated person who thinks and does exactly what they are thinking. So that is where the connectivity through the neurons in the brain are connecting, you know, it's almost creating a super highway between our limbic system and our prefrontal cortex. The enhanced process of meditation is being able to create that because you're stilling yourself, because you're allowing these pathways to be able to create. And then therefore, through your central lobe, your actions are equal to your words, is equal to your thoughts. So that is the
science
of it. In, I mean, I've given a layman explanation of it, but that's the fundamental science of it. So that is why I was very convinced that we need to take this to as many people in the world. And, you know, I mean, usually like all startup founders, you will do a assessment of the ecosystem, market size assessment. One thing really came out in the assessment, you've got two major global players in Headspace and Calm in this space, each, you know, valued over last at $3-4 billion, whatever you have it. And it was really a shame that in the world of mindfulness and meditation, we are sitting in the seat of the world as far as this is concerned. You know, whether you take Sikhism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, all of them have, you know, really defined a lot of their practices through this land. So our quest is to be able to take the best of these practices, allow them for today's world to be able to put in a well-consumed format, in a, you know, solid technology and label, you know, like kind of package it together for everybody to use. So, so yeah, that's what we are doing, and that's what we are having fun doing. So then we want to make sure that to our users who try the app and who subscribe to the app, how can we build the best possible experience?
Got it. Wow, that's again commendable. I think that's also the most elaborate yet succinct explanation on meditation that I've heard, and it's great how you've taken it up to the next level by solving for it from, you know, level. And I wasn't, like, to my ignorance, I should have been more aware, but the mindfulness concept and the entire beyond meditation, how you prepare your mind almost like, you know, you work out for your physical health, is a great approach to solving for that entire problem set. So I think that's super fascinating, Harshal. You know, as we conclude the episode, I have a set of similar questions that I usually ask. I have a bunch of follow-ups, but to go into each might consume a lot of time. But if I had to summarize some core principles that I observed again through research, you've spoken about vulnerability, you've spoken about minimalism, you've spoken about purpose-led action, right? It seems like you have been somebody who's in-depth researched about a bunch of things, thought about them, and then put them to action. And these are mostly soft principles in life that enhance the quality of what we do, right? More than functional things about, let's say, business gyan, right? Like, that is a secondary aspect of it. Not to say that that's how you live your life, but that's what, in my observation, stood out. The larger question I want to ask in brief is that, what are these core fundamental value systems that you define your life by, and how did you come to that conclusion? Is something that I'd love to know from your own words, because I think that'll help us grasp the kind of person you are in full, and that'll be very fascinating to know.
I don't think it is yet there, but I would like to live my life to work to give.
Okay.
So that's the core driving philosophy. How can I give beyond what I create? So that's my core philosophy. And therefore, can I create associations and partnerships with win-win attitudes? And can I take what I'm built, you know, I've been put into a particular scenario in this country at this point in time. Can I take the best of this and put it all over the world?
Got it. Oh, that's a fair summary. If you had to highlight one factor that contributes to what world would define as success, right? Material or non-material, what would that be according to you?
I would say, I don't know. I mean, this is a, you know, like, I don't know how to answer this question, to be honest. Like, I don't know if there's one factor, because each one, you know, if you look at success, like, I'll give you this analogy, okay? If you look at success as this big ball, you can arrive at success from this road, and you can arrive at success from this road, and you can arrive at this success from this road, and you will never see the totality of what success means, because success itself is so you know, large.
Yeah.
So you take the road you want. You know, I don't want to be prescriptive and define.
Sure, sure. But more importantly, I was just trying to gauge like that P1 for you, right? Like, what do you think is the largest contributor to success in general? Of course, there'd be many, but if you could...
I think, yeah, if you want badly to also see along with yourself the ones around you win, then I think that's required.
Got it. What does a sense of flow mean for you, and when are you in the best sense of flow?
I'm in the best sense of flow early in the morning, usually. Sense of flow means thoughts, ideas coming really from your core, which will then drive where you go with it.
In a world where startups did not exist or businesses did not exist, which basically means, let's say you couldn't be the founder of Shebang or Level, what would you end up doing?
I think I would be... what would I do? I would be working in either of the companies, I think. I'm naturally gravitated towards both these spaces.
Got it.
I would maybe... something else that I would be doing is devoting most of my time to public service. I've been attracted to being a farmer at some point.
Wow.
So, you know, it would be that. Or maybe I would be... another pet peeve I have is... I have this pet peeve of riding bicycles, so I would probably work towards
long distance cycling.
No, I would actually work towards making cycles a compulsory form of urban commute. Wow. So if I had to really spend myself, I think if I had to do something else, spend my time doing that, because I think there's so many related impacts of it,
yeah,
which is to get more people from cars onto bicycles.
Yeah.
There's like, you can just start and think about all the positive net externalities of doing that, from at an individual level, healthier people to, healthier, lower noise pollution across cities, to better utilization of space, to, better air quality, to if you can really work it, you can work with better safety standards.
Yeah.
That's an interesting
one. Very, very cool. And I often ask this question.
So thanks for asking me this question. I would devote my life to this. I would devote my life to driving public policy, to get more people off the road in cars to on the road on bicycles.
Very cool. Very cool. I usually ask this question to maybe just wonder out loud, right? Like what that passion, hidden passion is that you would have liked to pursue. But of course you have a purpose in life, which is why you devote yourself to that instead.
And by the way, just so you know, to this, what I would do, I'm following is in action. So it's been about five, I would say one and a half years.
Okay.
You've been now to Bombay how many times?
Four, five
times. So you know Bombay is not conducive to cycling.
Yes.
So it's been 5.5 years. I'm on two wheels.
Oh, yeah, that I know, because you mentioned it in Varun's podcast, yeah. I think. Yeah, and that was really fascinating to know. I at the time presumed that it was like a two-wheeler bike of sorts.
No, it's a bicycle. It's a core bicycle.
That's what I realized now.
Yes, it's functional because it folds into two. It's a brand called Dahon, and I still haven't got the top end, which is the Bromptons.
Okay.
One could argue these are the two ones that you can get. So I've got that. And then if I need to go a little further, then if I have to get into a car, I can put it into, the boot.
Very cool. Very cool. No, that's super.
And I like music.
Okay.
So the other passion I like is music. I've written a couple of songs.
Ooh,
wow. If anybody's listening, you should check it out. It's called Uth Jare. It's a song on entrepreneurship.
Okay.
And
I did see this on Instagram someplace. Yes.
Yeah. So it's a song written on entrepreneurship. I think now it has a close to 1 million views, that one.
Wow.
And it was written, I released it 3 years back on World Entrepreneurship Day, which is 21st of August, which is one day before my birthday. So I released it then, and I wrote that song to really encapsulate the journey of an entrepreneur. And now I'm actually, this evening, actually I'm going to record my fourth song, my fourth original, which I've written and composed. It's called Aina. So
we're looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Wow, where do you find the time?
Aina's actually, Aina, I did the scratch last year on my birthday. So it's taken me 1 year, 1 month to really arrive at the place with the song where I feel confident enough now to go in, record and put it out. So, I mean, and if you think of it in the total scheme of things, it's four songs in, you know, so much time. So yeah. It's like when I'm just hanging with myself or I'm doing my music practice and something will come to me, a thought will come to me and you will want to express it.
Yeah, although I meant in the broader scheme of things as, of course, a rhetorical question because, I mean, you know, it just seems, it's very easy to see from the outside and be like, you're doing so many things, but it's actually very channelized towards bringing your mind to work and like really putting your thoughts to action where you enjoy all of this, evidently. I have a couple of just very quick final questions, Harshil. One of them, like, this is a more lighthearted one, but if I had to ask your friends without you being in the room, how they would describe Harshil, what would they say?
They would say, one set of friends would say, PR, image management. Okay. One set of friends would say, bahut bolta hai. One set of friends would say, they would say that he's, he kind of described what you said, like, okay, purposeful, conscious, really knows what he's trying to do and is edging forward. I would say those would be three sets of friends that I would have.
Nice. This is somewhat repetitive, but I usually ask this as a way to, you know, maybe like understand what you really, really wish for. So if you could grant one wish to everyone, right? Every citizen in India, let's say, what would that be? I know you mentioned mobility, but if there could be something else that you deeply feel about.
Yeah. Vibrancy, exuberance, and the zest for life. You know, like today I was cycling. Actually, it's so interesting that you asked me this because today I was cycling to my first meeting and I was looking at people on the street and sometimes you see on the face, you know, the kind of exuberance you have right now. You don't see that on every face.
Yeah.
So if I had the power to request for a gift for everybody, I would request that. Like, let everybody find their Swadharma.
Very powerful. Very powerful. Awesome. I don't know what would be a fitting end because this has been such a diverse and interesting conversation. But let me give it a shot. It's probably stereotypical, but I often ask this to understand in hindsight what the most important learnings are. So if you could go back to the Harshil, you know, of the past, on the day you started Shebang, what would be the things you would ask yourself from the past to keep in mind? Maybe some top 2-3 learnings just to gauge what the most important and pivotal moments have been and what they've taught you. So if we can end with that, I think that'll really summarize your motivations and business learnings that combines the essence of this conversation.
I think if I had to really look at the biggest learning, it would be that your life is a set of consequences that have made you arrive at this very present moment. So if that is the case, really pause and reflect what has brought you here. Stand in this moment and see where you want to go. And as you see where you want to go, that's the first step to determining your next step that you would take to see where you'd want to go. So if I had to really break that down a bit more, you know, most of us where we are, we don't really learn as much as we want to from the past with detail.
Yeah.
And that's a process of really going into things. Okay, why did this happen? Okay, then what happened because of this? What was really going on when I did this? So that moment to sit by yourself, peacefully reflect from and learn from your biggest teacher, which is your own life, to arrive at the current moment and then see that, okay, you know, now that I'm here, where can I take it? I can take it there. Cool, I can take it there. This is my next first step.
Wow, that's amazing. I think that's so powerful. Talks about, I think, just briefly reflection, right? I think, and very underrated again, yet so powerful. Thank you so much for mentioning that. This has been great. I think I was expecting a lot from this conversation and I can assure you that I've come to the positive and taking back so many reflections. At many points during the conversation, I would have loved to reflect myself because there were a lot of thoughtful things being mentioned, and we've covered the spectrum of your personal learnings, characteristics, and how to grow and build and scale an agency to the level that you have with Shebang. Thank you so much for being on the show and for being very generous with your insights, time, and just general energy and persona.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for including me in this. And awesome. Good luck with connecting many more dots.
Thank you so much. Thank you.